Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan.
And it's me, Rachel Lindsay.
I want to give a shout out.
To me? Thanks.
No. I'll give a shout out to you anyway. You always give shout outs. I want to give a shout out to one of the most popping places on the internet right now, which is r/ThoughtWarriors on Reddit. It's going up. They didn't hit 1,000 subs. They having a live chat.
Is that because of your shout out? Did it increase after you shouted them out on the podcast?
I am not taking any responsibility for the success of one of the hottest places on the internet, which is r/ThoughtWarriors on Reddit. I'm not taking any responsibility for their success. What I'm saying is whoever's responsible for it is going up over there. That's what's happening. It's going up.
I love it. I love that there's this community out there. We got to get merch. We got to get so we can see people. We can see the Thought Warriors out there representing.
So you can't see them now? You can only see them when they bought stuff from you?
Van, how cool is it going to be to walk and see somebody wearing, I almost said what something could be, and I don't want anybody to steal it, but, you know, something Higher Learning.
Here's the thing, though. If they see you, they're going to come up to you. So you just want to sell them some stuff.
Have you had somebody stop? Because I don't know if we even get the profits from that. Have you seen?
Oh, wow. We don't know what the percentages are.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Bill, we don't know what the percentages are. We might have to make a Vimeo podcast about Bill. We don't know what the percentages are, man. Bill, I want to see the accounting.
Stop.
Bill.
This is sounding too familiar. I don't
Bill,
like it.
Bill, I want to see the accounting, Bill. Man, shout out to my
Have you met a Thought Warrior in
shout
the wild?
Shout out to my guys.
Have you?
Yes, I have. It's happened many times.
Yeah, and it's nice. And it's nice when they come up, talk about the pod with you.
It is. It's very nice. Like, the Thought Warriors are a delightful group of people. They're very diverse. You know, you never know what a Thought Warrior is going to look like. They come in all different types of shapes and sizes. Rachel, did you have a good weekend?
I worked all weekend. So, I mean, I guess press junket to Tribeca Film Festival. That was cool. Talked to Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro, Bobby. Call him Bobby.
I did not. I called him Robert. And Lisey's story. Are you a big Stephen King fan?
I am.
Got a new show coming out, Apple TV, Lisey's Story. A lot of levels to it. Very layered. Right. Good. Julianne Moore, Clive Owen. Then I did the MTV Movie and TV Awards.
Fantastic.
On the red carpet, people are back. It's fun. Good to see people.
Here's the thing. I love Stephen King. I've read most of the Dark Tower series. I've read all of the Dark Tower series.
Okay.
I read all of the classics. You know, I read The Stand. Tommyknockers, all of that stuff, you know, even going back. Stephen King is such a fantastic writer. I wrote a collection of short stories. He's got one called The Night Flyer, which is fucking terrifying, okay? but here's the thing. It's over.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
The Stephen King portion of my life.
Oh, I thought you were saying like Stephen King is done. Okay.
No. Stephen King, that brain is that brain will always happen. That brain will always be going, right? But for me, the Stephen King portion of my life is over.
All right.
That's it. Right. And I'll tell you why, because I gotta be honest with you. I don't have scary. No scary. I
watched the video. Just scared by real life? Real life scary enough. Got you.
No more scary. How about this? It's the end of scary, Rachel. Scary was fun. Remember when scary was fun? Remember when you were like, I want to watch Freddy Krueger, knowing that Freddy Krueger was going to scare the hell out of you? Were you scared of Freddy? Were you afraid of him?
Well, you know my movie history, Van. I wasn't allowed to watch Freddy Krueger back in the day when it was. He was scary to me just because I knew what he looked like, but I didn't understand that he appeared in your dreams and all of that. And I don't know the background. You know what I mean? I didn't get to watch it back then.
You couldn't watch Freddy, huh?
Not Child's Play, not Freddy, not Nightmare on Elm Street, not Jason.
What was the judge's idea of a scary movie?
Goosebumps.
They see him saying, Goosebumps kind of scary, though. I'm not going to lie.
That's what I used to read.
Goosebumps kind of scary, though. I remember one time, I think one of my earliest panic attacks, I was obsessed with Freddy.
What? Because Freddy was funny? Is that why? Because I feel like a lot of people loved Freddy.
So I liked to watch Freddy, but the reason why I was obsessed with Freddy is because, like, I, as a kid, got obsessed with things that there was no way out of, right? You were done. So this is what I mean by that.
Okay.
So any like slasher movie, I didn't really have a problem with the slasher guys because like I got a chance. You know, if you like the Scream dude, or like he was like a slasher.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
He better get me in a good spot. Cause if not, I got a shot.
Okay.
I got a chance with him. Okay. He comes at me with a knife. You never know. I might roll. Kick him in the leg and he might go down. I might stand over him.
You played this out in your mind.
Yeah, it's stuff I can do. You know what I mean? It's stuff I can do. Freddy, there's nothing. Okay? There's nothing you can do.
Stay awake.
You can't.
Stay awake. That's the whole thing.
And so here's the thing about Freddy. You watch the Freddy movies and the scariest thing, this little thing they do in Freddy movies where the person just nods. And you think they just nodded off real quick and they caught themselves. But no, they're asleep.
Right.
And everything else that's happening now is the dream. Their mom walks in and, hey, baby, do you want a piece of cake? Nah, mom, I don't want a piece of cake. And all of a sudden, mom goes, eat the piece of cake, bitch. And it's Freddy. And that kind of thing for a young Van used to mess with me because my mother would come in after I had nodded off. And if my mom had a weird look on her face, I'd be like, yo, is my mom Freddy right now? Is she Freddy? But I remember one time I thought I was actually in the Freddy. I thought Freddy was happening for real. I know I keep telling you guys stories like this, but I have fallen asleep on the couch. Okay.
Okay, Van.
I have fallen asleep on the couch. And if we get my mom back on here, she'll remember this. I have fallen asleep on the couch. And when I woke up, I looked at the television and there was a commercial for Freddy's 1-900 number.
Another commercial.
And look, when I woke up, all I saw, I remember, if you remember Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Freddy appears as an apparition in the TV and then he grabs a kid and he pulls him into the TV and he kills him. I remember I woke up and I saw Freddy on the TV, and he's like, ha, 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 dial 1-900 Freddy Krueger, ha. And I leapt up and ran to the back and was pounding on my parents' door.
How old?
Maybe, oh, man, 7 or 8, something like that. Seven or eight, pounded on my parents' door. And my dad came out there. Like, he didn't have no pants on. It almost hit me in the face. He came out there, boy, what's going on, boy? What's going on? What's wrong? What's wrong? And I'm like, Freddy Krueger. And he said, nigga, if you don't get your motherfucking ass out of my face talking about some Freddy Krueger, get your ass in your room and go to sleep. Get your ass. I'm like, yo, I'm scared. You're not going to. Hey, what's wrong, Terry? This nigga talk about some Freddy Krueger. This boy got to learn what's real and what's not.
What was scarier, your dad in that moment or Freddy Krueger on TV?
That's why I love my dad. That's why I love my dad. I love my dad because after running into him, Freddy didn't seem so scary anymore.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
I woke this man up at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, this was in the middle of the night.
Hell yeah.
Oh, I thought you took a nap on TV.
No.
Oh.
No, I had fallen asleep on the couch watching TV.
Got you.
But when I woke up, there was a Freddy 1-900 commercial playing. And I saw it, and okay, I ran to the back, and my dad was
It's dark. I get it. You're alone. I got you. And this is why the judge didn't let us watch these movies.
I can't hate on the judge. Because we watched them all. We watch Child's Play, and my dad would come in, and my dad would see me. I'd be watching Child's Play. He'd be like, now see what I'm talking about? I ain't going to stop you from watching it. I don't want to hear no shit about no motherfucking Chucky, though. Whatever you do, you're putting them thoughts in your head that ain't nothing but a demon on the TV. You're putting all these demonic thoughts in your head. Go ahead, boy. I ain't gonna tell you nothing, but don't run up. That's what he would say. All right. So look, we are going to end this podcast today with a talk with two activists that are going to attempt to give you some insight into the current conflict happening right now. In the Middle East. Now, these two are people who have worked with different organizations in America to address the conflict. And I am prefacing this by telling you that they are both pro-Palestine. We are going to do our best. It's going to be towards the end of the podcast. We're going to give you some of the other stuff first. We're going to try to do our best to maintain a nuanced conversation with them and discuss this issue so you guys can understand it better. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
we'll leave it at that. That's that. The Thought Warrior community have been asking us to touch this. We want to make sure I have my own personal thoughts on it. Rachel has her own personal thoughts on it, but we want to talk to people who had maybe more informed thoughts. Mm-hmm. And well, let's do it. You guys can have it right there. Of course, it's a big issue. We're going to talk about it here on the podcast. Before we get to any of that, though, we're going to take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Okay. Should we start the podcast off with
on
news
a lighter
from
note?
The world? The news from the world of the... I know how I want to start the podcast off. I know how I want to start the podcast off.
What
I have to do. So I am going to double down on something that I said on the podcast earlier.
Which you typically do.
Okay. Remember when I said that the settlement between Bill and Melinda Gates should be...
Are we doing this again?
Just listen. I said it should be one person get $100 million.
$100 million.
Whatever. I stand by that, except I think now Bill Gates should be the one to get $10,000 and the rest of the money should go to Melinda Gates. I was completely wrong on the splits. Melinda Gates doesn't just deserve all of Bill's money. I think she deserves probably her neighbor's money and other people in the surrounding areas. I didn't know what this woman was going through, and I'm sorry.
Nobody did.
I'm sorry to Melinda Gates. It's hard for me to say sorry to a billionaire, but I am. Bill Gates was out here wilding. We didn't even cover it in the podcast before.
We didn't.
That she actually first sort of moved away or pulled back from him because he was hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein, according to the Wall Street Journal, okay? According to reporting done in the Wall Street Journal. But that's not all. Is it the Wall Street Journal?
Yes. It was the Wall Street Journal.
According to reporting done in the Wall Street Journal. But that's not all. By the way, we should say that. First of all, let's not gloss over that. Did you read that story about the Jeffrey Epstein connection?
Yeah, with Bill? Yes.
Bill and Epp.
But here's the thing. It had been reported on before, I think in 2011, 2013, don't quote me on this, but years before, that they had had a connection. It had come out. And Melinda? Oh, shoot. Melinda. Is that her name? Oh,
yes, Melinda.
I thought it was Melissa for a second. Okay. And Melinda was upset about it. She was upset at the affiliation between her husband and Epstein and the fact that now the public knew about it. But I didn't even know this connection was made. So when all this stuff was coming out about Jeffrey, they started talking about other prominent and powerful people that were connected to him, including old Bill here.
So here's the thing.
We've only been talking about Clinton.
So here's the thing about the Epstein deal. By the time that Epstein would have met Bill Gates, we should say that Bill Gates categorically denies being a part of any of Jeffrey Epstein's whatever he was doing, any child trafficking, any abuse of young women. He says that that wasn't a thing. The only problem with that is the timeline in which these guys were hanging out. Epstein's reputation would have already have been solidified around circles. You would have heard stuff. This is also, I believe, because if we're talking about 2014, I think the last time that Epstein was actually before his final arrest, he was arrested, I think it was 2013 or something like that, or even before then, that he had actually been criminally accused of some of this stuff. So by the time Bill Gates starts coming around Jeffrey Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein has a reputation of being a guy that abuses and traffics young women. The question then becomes, if you're Bill Gates, why would you hang around him knowing that that was a thing about him?
He had already pled guilty to soliciting prostitution.
That's what
of
I'm
a
talking
minor.
About.
Like,
yeah.
Pled guilty, not beyond accused, had pled guilty. So it was out there. This was public knowledge. Yet Bill Gates continued to associate and affiliate with him. That, and even if you say it was about philanthropy, why would you want your name or the money to come from somebody who's about this life? There's no way. When you hear people talk about or watch a documentary on everything that Epstein was doing, there's no way that you were around him and did not know what was going on. He seemed to be very upfront with it. And there's even a quote from Bill Gates that says, Jeffrey lived an intriguing life. What does that mean?
Huh.
What does that mean, Bill?
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Is Bill Gates a nasty ass nigga?
I think I'm going to have to say it looks that way, Van.
It looks like to me, and I don't want to lob accusations out there, but it looks like to me that Bill Gates is your garden variety nasty motherfucker. That's
because
what it seems like.
It does seem that way. And isn't your question, how was this not more public knowledge? And before anybody says that we're jumping to we're speculating here, the fact that Melinda had an issue with him hanging out with Jeffrey means that it was happening on more than one occasion.
Well, she read about it. Well, we should say from what
but
I understood.
But she went to the house.
She read, but from what?
She went to Epstein's house.
The tea is bubbling.
She went to his mansion and had dinner with him.
Who, Melinda did?
Yes. And it was after that.
Wait. Hold on.
Trudy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on this.
Melinda had dinner at the Epstein house too?
One time. Like, they went to meet. It was like an initial dealing with them.
Well, if Melinda had dinner at the Epstein house too, then that kind of indicts her in the situation too.
But it was after that that she said she didn't like him affiliating with him. She didn't want him hanging out with him. It was an issue. It was an issue, which in 2019 is when things started. I guess up until 2019, Bill Gates was still hanging with him, has flown on the plane. We talked about the plane here. We only talked about a different Bill. Now we're talking about Bill Gates here.
So Bill Gates apparently sought information, advice from Jeffrey Epstein about ending his marriage with Melinda because he said that it was toxic. So he'd been trying to get out of it for a while. But that's not even the latest story. That's like that's actually old news. The newest story is that Microsoft is confirming that it investigated an intimate relationship that Gates had with an employee. Microsoft launched an internal investigation into its co-founder and longtime board member, Bill Gates, into a relationship with a company employee. The alleged incident happened more than 20 years ago, Microsoft said in a statement to CBS Money Watch on Monday. And the company said it hired an outside law firm in the second half of 2019 to conduct the investigation and provided extensive support to the employee who raised the concern. In March 2020, Gates announced his departure from the company's governing board, saying he was stepping down to focus on his work at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It looks like there could be some sort of connection between all of this stuff coming to light, this investigation, and Bill Gates decided that he no longer wanted to be a decision maker at Microsoft. So, by the way, I don't know what to say about this. This is as a lawyer, all of this stuff is coming out about Bill Gates. Yeah. He's in the middle of a divorce. Are the numbers just going through the roof now for Melinda? This obviously a very public back and forth war that's going on right now with us getting all of this stuff right.
So you think this is coming out? You think Melinda's camp is putting this information out?
Rachel, is that like a real question? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. First of all, I can't say that Melinda's.
Go ahead.
I can't say that Melinda's camp is putting it out because some of the reporting that's being done on this is being done by someone who I kind of know, the wife of Kevin Clark, who works here at The Ringer. So I'm not saying that she is sort of Bill and Melinda Gates, or excuse me, with Melinda Gates. I can't say that because she's a fantastic reporter. I guess what I would say is, I actually do take that bet. I guess what I would say right now is that all of this reporting is happening because there's such interest in the breakup of their relationship, and it's going to end up benefiting Melinda Gates, at least in the court of public opinion. I shouldn't say
Public opinion, it benefits her. I don't know. That's not necessarily going to have any type of affect the decisions that are made when it comes to divorce court or handling that. Listen. Oh, okay. Thank you, Trudy. I was right about Melinda going to the Gates, to the house. Not to the Gates house, to Epstein's house.
That looks bad on her then. Looks bad on her too. Looks bad.
She went in 2013.
So what?
With Bill, and it's reported that she was appalled, but it's unclear if she found out about what he was doing or if it was his personality, but the report says that she was appalled.
And the reason I don't want to say it looks bad is because there also seems to be information coming out that Melinda didn't have as big of a voice as it was, as public, as it looked like she did publicly, as they run this foundation together. It seems like there was some report, and this is allegedly, that the way that he spoke to Melinda was talking down to her. So we don't know what kind of pressure or force was put on her to attend this type of meeting. So I don't want to necessarily blame that. We're speculating a lot here. We're hearing bits and pieces as all this information is coming out. But
hold on for a second, though. You can blame Bill Gates for hanging around Epstein before. Like we said, hold on. We said before, why would Bill Gates want to go be around Epstein knowing who Epstein was? Melinda Gates went too.
He continued to hang around.
What
we
I'm
have
saying
no
is,
idea.
I think right now, let's say R. Kelly gets let out. Let's say R. Kelly gets let out.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly gets let out. I'm not going to kick with R. Kelly. I'm not going to kick with R. Kelly.
Okay. I don't know what kind of situation Melinda was in to go to that dinner. But all I know is immediately from what's the reports coming out, she was disgusted by it. And there's no record of her ever affiliating or associating with Epstein again. So yeah. I'm not going to put her and Bill on the same level when it comes to that. I think what's so shocking about this, too, is one, to hear the reports of the harassment that was allegedly going on at Microsoft at the hands of Bill Gates, with him talking to, going on trips with people and asking them out to dinner, apparently emailing, saying, hey, do you want to go out with me? If this is uncomfortable, pretend this never happened. We never really heard about Bill Gates and his personal life. You never see him being affectionate. He almost comes across as asexual.
It looks like Bill Gates has never fucked a living thing before in his life.
Do you remember the question that you asked one time about who can you just absolutely not see having sex?
Right.
Bill Gates might have been on that list. So to hear that he has these accusations against them, or he's been doing certain things or dealing with an Epstein, it's shocking. That's not the person that you might have guessed would be a part of that lifestyle, be about that life.
I always wonder about, you know, people talk about rich people and secret societies where they go and they drink the blood of a goat. And then they chant and they pledge their life to dark forces, and they have all kinds of weird sex, and they do all of this stuff. And it's, and you think that those things don't really exist, but I'm not gonna lie, they probably exist.
Those people get bored. When you got all the money in the world and this power, They're just looking for something else to do.
Get how much money Bill Gates has.
That's what I'm saying. He's bored.
If Bill Gates is hitting, I'll be honest with you. If Bill Gates is hitting on the Microsoft employees, then he is just straight. That's perverted. I'll tell you why that's perverted.
He's so gross.
I'll tell you why that's perverted. Because, look, it's not perverted to hit on somebody that you work with. That's something that happens, right? But if you're Bill Gates, you're so far past. Like, Bill Gates could have been, it's like weird. It's like a fetish that he wants to have sex with people that work at Microsoft. It must be some kind of weird thing because he has so much money. I always see these European billionaires that are dating Victoria's Secret models. You know, you see a guy and he looks like a living slice of pastrami. And you're thinking, why is this Victoria's Secret angel with this person? And then you see that, hey, he's some kind of fashion magnate or some sort of media mogul from some other place, you know. And you think about this woman and she's with this guy. Maybe she loves him, but she can't really want to lick his sunspots and all of that. You think about it, right? Bill Gates is richer than all of those Speedo on the Amalfi Coast wearing guys put together. He has more money than all of those guys. If he wanted to live the life of some sort of Lothario that went around having sex with, he would have had his pick, but he chose to do it in like a seedy, weird, peculiar way. I gotta be honest with you. I've answered my own question. Yes, Bill Gates is a nasty motherfucker.
And you're not even adding the fact that he is the most powerful person at Microsoft. So add to it the fact that, yeah, the weirdness, all of that. He's exerting his power over these people. He's putting them in extremely uncomfortable situations as the boss, coming after them and talking to them in such an inappropriate way. It's gross. It's disgusting. I am so glad that you marched back your words about the 100 million, because clearly Melinda has been suffering all these 27 years.
I have more information now.
Who knows if he was doing this stuff outwardly? Who knows what was going on inside of that household? Who knows what she had to endure over these last 27 years? Sounds like she's been plotting her escape for a while, though. And good for her. I hope she gets everything that she wants out of this divorce, including freedom from Bill and having to not associate with him anymore.
Now, there's only one way for her to get back at Bill. There's only one way.
What's that?
She got to get with Jeremy Meeks.
I thought you were going to say she had to get with the competition. But the fact that you just named Jeremy Meeks, I can't.
She got to get with Jeremy Meeks. Melinda Gates got to give Jeremy Meeks a shot.
Why would he care about that?
Because, I'll be honest with you, if you're a Bill Gates type, really if you're any guy, the one guy you don't want to see your ex with is Jeremy Meeks. You know, it's true.
I'm giving Jeremy way too much credit.
I'm not giving Jeremy too much credit at all. Jeremy Meeks is fucking beautiful. And he's got all of those tattoos and all of that stuff. And you see this guy coming in because you look at him and you think to yourself, well, now what? Like, this is what happened. She leaves me and she goes get some guy like this. She could have never been into me if that guy was out there for her. So, but to me, if Melinda Gates really wants to get back at Bill, she should just start tricking off on Jeremy Meeks.
I can't even entertain that.
Why?
I can't even entertain this conversation about Jeremy Meeks.
That's impossible for Jeremy Meeks? Jeremy Meeks has been with billionaire ladies before. Jeremy Meeks is well-schooled in this.
He's been with one billionaire.
Right. So.
And that's, I'm not saying, yes, okay, maybe he's not, listen. Okay, Melinda, don't go after Jeremy. Let me just put it there. Just don't go. Do it. You can do better.
All right. I guess more problems for Joe Budden. DJ Olivia Dope, who was one third of the See the Thing Is podcast with Bridget Kelly and Mandy, she left the podcast abruptly, maybe like 3 or 4 months ago, something like that. The podcast came out. They had a good chemistry. Shout out to Mandy. Shout out to Bridget. I don't know Olivia. I know Mandy. I know Bridget through like social media and stuff, but like,
I know
I've
Bridget
met her before. I've never met Bridget before. Good podcaster, seems like a nice lady. Mandy is a nice lady. Olivia left after Joe came to one of their podcasts. And you watch the podcast, and you know, Joe was talking very aggressively, he was calling him B word and all of that stuff. And a lot of people thought that maybe that sent her over the edge. Apparently it was more. She went on her Instagram and talked about the fact that during that podcast, Joe had said that he, actually, you know what? Let's play a portion of what Olivia said so she can say it for herself. This is what she said that Joe said to her while they were filming.
There's an edit in the recording because Joe says him and I should speak more because, quote, he's been wanting to fuck me since we've met.
Okay, so there you have it. She's saying that she was harassed by Joe Budden and she felt unsafe. And she also is inadvertently also saying that maybe she didn't get enough support from the people around her in that situation. And that's what forced her to leave the See the Thing Is podcast. This, of course, comes only a couple of days after Rory and Maul responded to Joe Budden. They put out an hour-long response, accused him of not showing them the proper accounting, of not having the business right, and of basically betraying them as friends. So it seems like right now, Joe is not having the best month. Rachel, you watched this. You watched Olivia. What are your thoughts?
So I would encourage everyone to go listen to, it's about 25 minutes. Go to Olivia Dope. I think that's her Instagram name. Go to her page and listen to what she has to say. It's emotional. It's honest. It's heartfelt. And it's disturbing. Joe Budden is a monster. And I wholeheartedly believe that. And whether you believe the Rory and Maul situation, whether you believe Olivia, where there's smoke, there is fire. And it is absolutely despicable and disgusting to hear what Olivia went through from her boss in her place of business. And I think one of the most disturbing things, if you listen to this 25-minute video, is that she actually apologizes. She's actually says, I should have done this. Maybe if I had done more research on Joe, maybe if I had done more research on how he is in a work environment, then like as if she's faulting herself. Olivia, you did absolutely nothing wrong. The fact that your boss came to your workplace, exerted his power over you, said that he belittled you, demeaned you by saying that he wanted to F you multiple times on your podcast, laughing about it. Nobody challenged him in the room. And for anybody who says, why didn't she say something? To hear her talk about how uncomfortable she was in that situation, and I think a lot of women understand this and have to go through this. There is such fear of feeling like you're too sensitive, you're too emotional, you want to seem like you're one of the boys, like everything is okay, that you just laugh away inappropriate and uncomfortable situations when they're wrong. And what we really should be doing is calling them out. And he was wrong in that situation. And the fact that no one in production, not her castmate, her coworkers took up for her in that moment is gross. And it's wrong. And we have to start calling out that type of behavior. And we have to stop uplifting these people who have these platforms and putting them on a pedestal when they are so harmful to women and just people and the culture in general. It's disgusting not only to hear that he was talking to her like that, but then later knowing why she left the podcast, knowing that she had got legal involved in the situation, he makes light of it on his later on a podcast and says that any woman that's working with him, he's going to want to have sex with. Did I get that right?
He referenced a joke that Rick Ross had. He joked about something that Rick Ross had said when Rick Ross was on The Breakfast Club that got Ross in a little bit of trouble.
We got to start calling these people out. Like, I don't listen to the Joe Budden podcast. I can't say I'm a supporter, I'm a fan, but we have to call him out. The fact that this woman had to leave her job because of the way that he came at her and he's making a joke of it, it's disgusting. It's disgusting.
So let me ask you this. For people that would say, because there are a bunch of people in Olivia's comments who are big Joe fans that are saying he was joking around, and when he was joking and saying these things, the other ladies in the room were laughing at them. So maybe he didn't feel that she was being violated in the way that she felt that she was.
If my boss is telling me on multiple occasions he wants to quote fuck me, that's not even funny. It's not even fucking funny. And that's the thing. It's one thing, and I'm not saying it's okay for somebody to make a joke, but you're flat out saying, I've always wanted to meet you and I want to fuck you multiple times. And then he called her a bitch. And then he made light of it. There's no humor in that. There's no way to slice that other than just it's on the wrong side of it. And the fact that he thinks that he's comfortable enough doing that on air, and they were filming it, and was okay with that version going out. And if you listen to her story, the only reason it was cut out is because production said she looked so uncomfortable when he was talking to her.
She said they actually called her back in when they watched it back, and they saw that she looked uncomfortable. So they called her back in when they watched it back and asked her if she wanted it taken out. She said that she wanted to take it out. And for everyone saying that she didn't raise any concern then, and who are accusing her of clout chasing Rory and Maul, what do you think about that? The fact that this is coming out 2 days after, and
you have no idea what you would do in that situation. And if you listen to her, you hear her speak about how it took a long time for her to get to that place. And you know why she didn't want to speak out? Because of exactly why people are writing those things. People are writing those things in their comments are the same reason that she did not want to speak out. Right. She knew people were going to be critical of her, not give her the benefit of the doubt, which we see so often when it comes to women, especially women of color. For some reason, we want to be on Joe's side. Why? Because his name is on a podcast. Why? Because you followed him from this platform to this platform. And because she doesn't have the same power or platform or she's not as big of a public figure as he is. That is so wrong. If you listen to her, if you take those 25 minutes to understand why she is just now coming out, then there's no way that you can be critical of her. And I just want to challenge everyone. If you were in that situation, how easy do you think it would be for you to speak up? That's your job on the line. That's your reputation. She's taking a huge risk by coming out and saying that and potentially being blackballed in this industry because she is going to speak out. So many people are going to be like, oh, I don't want to say anything around Olivia because she might be put me on blast on her Instagram, which is a terrible place to be. She was violated. She was disrespected and she should have the right to speak out on it without any repercussions. Those should only be going Joe Budden's direction.
Well, there you go. We'll leave it there. I mean, the thing here is there's really nothing to believe. You know how sometimes things come out and there's one side and there's the other side. There's really nothing to believe. There's really not going to be anybody, unless someone could produce a tape that this didn't happen, which I don't think that's very likely to be the case. This obviously happened. So the question then becomes all about how she felt about it. And you just cannot begrudge her feelings. Mm-hmm. You can't. So unless there was someone was able to put out a podcast, a whole full podcast where that was never said and that was never done, that would be the only way to kind of get at what she's saying. But if it happened and that's the way she felt, then that's the way that she felt. And that's the risk that you take whenever you do something like that.
Yep.
You know, you got to be careful the way you talk to ladies and the way you, because everybody not on that level where they playing with you like that.
Yeah.
Not, and I would say in a situation where you're somebody's boss, probably err on the side of caution and don't fuck around like that.
Exactly.
Fucking around or not, because you're going to make somebody feel the way Olivia felt. And if you watch it, it's clear that that's the way that she felt.
Yeah.
Before we get off of it, you say you know Bridget, you know Mandy.
I know Bridget.
You know Bridget. I know Mandy. Mandy's cool chick, dope girl. What do you think about... We haven't heard... See, the thing is going to probably, I think, drop tomorrow or something.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a woman in that same situation, if you're in that deal, how do you feel about the way, from just what you got from Olivia and what was said, like how they handled it?
Well, I mean, according to Olivia, they removed her from the moment that she said she was stepping away, and I think she expressed why, they removed her from the group chat. That was their initial response. But then she says she later had separate conversations with both of them, and it seemed like it was amicable, you know, so she didn't give too much detail on that. I mean, if I'm them, I personally am very curious as to what their response is going to be. I can imagine what it's going to be. The fact that they're still on the Joe Budden network, I'm sure they're going to say
it's between Olivia and Joe.
It's between Olivia and Joe. They probably have never. He didn't. It is a fact, according to Olivia's own story about it, that he didn't direct those derogatory statements towards the other women, only towards her.
Right.
So I'm sure that they'll speak to that. And I'm sure they'll say that they support Olivia and her decision to step away. And I think that they'll also say that if Joe came at them that way, that they would do the same thing Olivia would do. But the fact
But Mandy's a little different. Mandy might say, hey, if Joe said that about me, I might just laugh it off.
And you she might.
Yeah.
She might.
So, you know, who knows? But a lot of shit, man.
I just wouldn't.
This is a lot of mess out here.
I can't imagine if my boss said to me, like, basically taking away my talent and saying, you know, I've wanted to fuck you for a long time. I wouldn't want to work there. You're not even looking at me for what I bring to the table. You're just looking at me in the physical being. I just personally wouldn't want that. I want somebody to respect my craft.
Right. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of respecting crafts, J. Cole had his first professional basketball game. That's why they called me the Segway Master. Rach, you good? I know you were very passionate about that. I remember when you hit me in the group text and you were like, Joe Budden is a monster. I was like,
it's
God damn.
I wasn't even surprised when I heard it. It wasn't even surprised. It's just more disturbing. I just stop uplifting these type of people. Please. Sorry.
So look, J. Cole played with the Rwanda Patriots of the Basketball Africa League. Do you know what J. Cole's stat line was in this game?
No. Wait, can I guess?
Okay, so I want you to guess. So in 17 minutes, by the way, before
17
we even,
minutes. Okay.
Hold on. Before we even get into what Cole's stat line is, I got to say two things. Number one, The Offseason is a fucking fantastic album. 95 South is one of the best songs I've heard in a long time. Number two, the fact that J. Cole is playing pro basketball is such a goddamn achievement to me. That's so dope to me.
Did he try out?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not sure, but the fact that he's doing something and living a lifelong dream is amazing to me. Okay.
Oh, wait. So this wasn't a one game? He's like legit on the team?
Nah, he's on the team.
And what team is he playing for? Hope. And what team?
He plays for the Rwanda Patriots.
Okay. So he's living there now.
I don't think he's living in Rwanda. No, I don't think he's living.
Okay.
There. I think he's spending significant time there as he goes around Africa with the team, is what
I
think.
Before I guess his stat line, what position does he play?
I'm imagining he's a guard. I haven't looked at the breakdown of the game, though.
Okay.
All right. So J. Cole, his stat line, he played 17 minutes. Guess Cole's stat line, Rach. What would you say? Points, rebounds, assists.
Okay. Points, I'm going to say with 8.
Okay.
Rebounds, 2. Assists, 3.
Okay. He finished with 3 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists.
Whoa, I was kind of close on the assist rebounds.
And they're close on the assists and rebounds. This is what I'm going to say right now.
Wait, was it a 3-pointer or was it
No, I think he went to the line because I saw him get a follow. Looked pretty good on the follow.
So that's good.
Yeah, J. Cole's 36 years old, so he's not he's not a spring chicken in terms of like sports is concerned. He's beginning his pro sports career at an advanced age.
Okay,
so I'm looking at this. His team won the game 83-60. I say for the season, I'm gonna say Cole's gonna average, and it's gonna be a successful campaign. Nope, it's gonna be 7-3 for Cole.
Okay.
And he's going to have at least one game where he gets hot and he go for like 20 or 25.
Okay.
There's going to be a signature Cole game in this Rwanda professional basketball game.
Hey, 7-3-3 has a nice ring to it. That could be the name of the next album.
7-3-3.
There you go.
I like these stats. I think these are good stats for his first game. I think this is something to build on. He wasn't out there just like doing a Tony Snell offer. You know, Tony Snell had an offer.
Right, he made the board, and 17 minutes is some significant time. I'm impressed.
Cole out here, man.
Yeah.
Hating on Cole.
Yeah, as long as as long as he had more points than fouls. How many fouls did he have? That matters. If he had 4 fouls and 3 points, that's not a good look.
I don't know.
That's not a good look.
I want to celebrate him. I'm choosing to celebrate him.
Okay, 7-3-3.
That's really all that happened in the world of music. Nicki Minaj dropped. She had a song with Wake and Drain. I love this. Wake and Drain. Wake. Wake.
Yes, I heard you.
I made 2 new rappers. I combined Lil Wayne and Drake and made 1 Wake and 1 Drain. That's dope. They should take that concept. You have one amalgam where it's a Wayne and Drake mashup where Wayne is the dominant character, and then you have another amalgam where it's a Drake and Wayne, and Drake is the dominant character. If you smash Drake and Wayne together, fuck the song. The song was dope. Wayne's verse, best verse in a long time. If you smash why are you doing it? If you smash Drake and Wayne together, what would you get? Like, I'm gonna ask you this. This is Van's very serious question of the week. Before we get to our very serious interview about Israel and Palestine, if you smash Drake and Wayne together, give me the attributes that this rapper would have. Give me Drain.
So this is one rapper.
Right. One rapper.
Smash. Did I say Wapper? Did I say Wapper? Please take
you
that.
Might have.
One rapper.
Wake.
You're messing
wait,
me
I
up.
Keep doing
You're,
it.
And you got me
I
saying Wapper. You're
I
messing
keep doing it. I don't know why. What's going on? I have no clue.
Drake and Wayne.
Mash them together. What's the attributes you take from both of them to make the perfect rapper?
Oof. That's so tough. I mean, they obviously stand alone. Mm-hmm. Great. I'm tempted to say Drake singing, but I'm not a huge fan of that. You know what? It wouldn't be the style. It more so would be the content of what they rap about, since they grew up and they had totally different lifestyles. I guess that's the best I can get. Sorry.
So this is what I would do if I was combining Drake and Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
I would take Wayne's Gangsta, and I would combine it with Drake's Emotion, and then you're gonna get like a Pac type of situation, right? You're gonna get like a Pac deal. I take Drake's Melody, and I combine it with Wayne's unforgivingness, his unflinching, his brashness, right?
Okay.
I'll do this. Take Drake's Melody, combine it with Wayne's brashness. Think about Wayne not having to use auto-tune and then kind of singing and harmonizing about all the stuff that he raps about, right? You know, you take the harmony out of it. That would be dope to me, okay? Then,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Couple of things. The style, I'm going to go with Wayne, just like the overall dress.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I'm going to go with overall Wayne, right? So I'm going to take the Wayne style. So we're going tiny clothes, tight pants, truck fit, skater vibe. I'm going to take that. But I'm going to combine that. Okay. I'm going to combine that with Drake's sensibility. So you know how Drake is aloof and he's mysterious. He doesn't talk very much. He doesn't do any interviews. He's the reluctant star living in his Toronto mansion, sipping on wine with ice in it, talking to Elliot.
Is Drake aloof?
He's aloof. He's aloof.
Is he mysterious? I feel like we know a lot about Drake.
Mysterious rapper. Really? Really? You know a lot about Drake?
Well, no. I just feel like...
You know a lot about Drake?
No, well, I don't personally, but I'm just saying, I feel like I would never describe Drake as mysterious.
I think he's very mysterious. I think Drake is very
mysterious. We hear about the women that he's dating. Or maybe it's just that you see him.
You hear about the women that he's dating. You hear rumors. You don't see him with women.
Hmm.
So you see what I'm saying? That's mysterious. Like you hear rumors. You hear, hey, there's this model with a 48-inch ass. Drake has sex with her. You never see them together.
Like, you don't.
For right
you're
now.
Right. You're right.
There was never, before we knew about Rosie Divine, Sophie, I don't mean to call her, that's how I knew her, Rosie Divine, Drake's baby's mom. Before we knew about her, we had never seen her and a Drake in a picture together.
You're correct. You're right.
Never. Never. Never.
All right. I'll give it to you. I guess we just talk a lot about Drake. You think that you know things, but you don't. They're rumors. All right. Okay. All right.
He's mysterious.
Stop. Stop. Stop.
He's a mysterious. Drake like turns into like a light-skinned miss. He's like he can dematerialize. He can.
Stop.
He just shows up as soon as, and that's the scary thing, because your girl is in her room and she's listening to Drake. And like before you know it, that nigga just pops up in her room.
So he's Freddy Krueger.
He's the Freddy Krueger of rap. Because as soon as your girl goes to sleep, Rachel, you're a genius.
I know.
As soon as your girl goes to sleep, she dreams about him.
Drake
pops up. Your girl sleep. Y'all think y'all
this would
cool.
be a really good song, by the way.
Yeah. Y'all watching Hold On, We Coming Home. Your girl falls asleep on you. And then she wakes up. But when she wakes up and looks at you, it's not you. It's Drake. You know what I'm saying? That's dope.
I like it. I like it.
Shout out to Drake and Wayne. Shout out to Nicki. Hip hop. People say hip hop is back. Hip hop never went anywhere. Everybody this year that's winning is rapping. It's rapping. Everybody who's winning is rapping. I love it. I love it. All right. Now, listen, guys, we've had a lot of fun. We are going to leave you with an interview touching on what's going on in the Middle East right now. It is an interview talking about a subject that is very difficult to discuss. But these are the subjects that we must discuss in order to contextualize our world and analyze the politics that draw some of the lines that we think cannot be undrawn. I assure you that the conflict in the Middle East has a resolution. There is a way to find peace. There is a way to find balance. There is a way to find safety. The question is, as a world, if we are brave enough to ask the questions and take the steps that are needed to find all of those things. So we're going to leave you with this. And then we're going to see you guys next week.
Next week. See you on Friday.
And then
we're something?
And then we're going to see you guys Friday.
Yep.
All right, peace.
Bye.
Okay, so we had been telling you guys, our listenership, our thought words, that we were going to have a conversation that at least attempted to touch on the crisis and the bloodshed that is happening right now in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine. There are ways that these things are thought about in the American conscious, that these are thousands of year old religious battles that have, you know, are somewhat intractable, and there's nothing that can be done about them. And then there are the real world ideas and political structures and really only decades old history that lead to some of the things that we're seeing right now. It's also something that we understand there is an intense amount of polarization on. It's very difficult to be somewhere in the middle on this issue. So what we thought it would be best to do would be to bring in a couple of people who can at least answer some of the questions that you guys might be having about what's going on, about how the U.S. fits in this, and what these, they're almost like outbreaks of violence every couple of years between the two sides here, what they mean for the people that are living in the region. So we have joining us today, Rebecca Abu-Chadid, who is an Arab-American lawyer and activist. She is also the organizer of Lebanon Relief Campaign for the Center of Arab-American Philanthropy. We also have Simone Zimmerman, who is a leading, she's the co-founder of, If Not Now, a movement of American Jews to end Israel's occupation. Let's start right there. Because when a lot of people hear the term end Israel's occupation, they say that that in and of itself is a side. Obviously, when you hear the term occupation, it makes it seem as if the government of Israel is illegally occupying or imposing their will upon the Palestinian people. I'll ask you, Simone, since that is an organization that you founded, is that what's happening in the Middle East? Is Israel occupying and oppressing Palestinian people?
Yes, it is. Can I elaborate on that?
Please.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, great. So the other part of my title is that I'm also the director of B'Tselem USA, and I work with Israel's leading human rights organization, B'Tselem, which for over 30 years has been documenting human rights abuses in the occupied territories in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, and has basically been working for the last 30 years to expose Israeli society and the world to the horrors of Israel's ongoing undemocratic rule over millions of Palestinians. And B'Tselem is also one of a number of human rights organizations who in the last couple of months have come out and taken the position that the regime that is governing all of the people between the river and the sea is an apartheid regime, which means that the Israeli government is actually the government that controls all of the land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. And there are roughly equal amounts of Palestinians and Jews who live there. And everywhere between that land, Jewish people have full and equal rights as citizens under that government, and Palestinians don't. And depending on where they live under throughout that land, they receive different amounts of rights, but they're never the same or equal to what Jewish people receive.
Describe what rights Palestinians that are living in the region that you're talking about don't have.
Well, I guess the first one I can say is that Palestinians who live in the occupied territories don't have the right to vote for the government that determines their fate, the Israeli government. So, over the last, one of the many pieces of context that is important to understand this moment is that in the last 2 years, Israel has had four rounds of elections for their government. And we're not going to get into all the political minutiae of what's gone on in those elections. But what I can say is 5 million people have never gotten to participate in those elections, even though the decisions that that government makes deeply impact every aspect of their life. And now I'll just elaborate on a couple other things. Freedom of movement, the right to protest, the right to healthcare. I mean, basic human and civil and political rights that we all take for granted as citizens of a democratic society. Palestinians living in the occupied territories, don't have those.
Let me ask you this, because it's interesting with everything that we're seeing. A lot of people get their information on social media these days. Obviously, that's not the best place to get your source of information. But what we're seeing is a lot of people are hesitant to post about what is happening right now in the Middle East. And so what I would like, and frankly, it's because they don't have an understanding of what's going on. Why is war returning now in Gaza? Why does it always seem to be this back and forth of this war? We're seeing it every few years. How did it start? Maybe that's too much to go that far back. But just to give our listeners an understanding of what is happening and why it's happening, just so people can understand what's going on.
Yeah, I'll take that. So Rachel, there's a lot of things that you touched on that are, I think, really important points. And the first is that I think Americans have been led to believe that the two sides are Jews and Arabs, or Jews and Palestinians. And so if they take a side, they're going to alienate maybe friends of theirs who are Jewish or friends of theirs who are Palestinian. And one of the really important things that Simone and I felt about appearing together was to change that narrative, to show that I'm Arab American and someone who's Jewish American, and here we are, and we work all the time together. And so the two sides are not Arabs and Jews. They are people who want to end the conflict and people who, for many different reasons, want to keep the status quo going. And there are Arabs and Jews on both on those two sides. And so when we're asking people to speak up, social media can be problematic often, but there is one thing about it that has been pretty amazing. And that is, and I think one of the reasons you're seeing a change now, is that you are finally hearing Palestinian voices in a way that you couldn't before, because mainstream media didn't share those voices. And so just to give you one example, there is one now Palestinian member of Congress, her name is Rashida Tlaib. And last week she spoke, and I get emotional just thinking about it, but she spoke on the House floor. And she quoted a tweet from a mother in Gaza who said, "Tonight, all of us as a family slept in the same room so that if we die, no one has to mourn the other." And Rashida read that on the floor of the House of Representatives. And that mother, the next morning, woke up to find out that Rashida Tlaib read her tweet. And she responded to Rashida and said, "I've always known that our voice was more powerful than their weapons." And so this really is an opportunity to lift up those voices that otherwise have been ignored for so many years. And Van, you mentioned, this feeling that there's a cycle of violence and every few years it flares up. But really, the reality for Palestinians is that the daily life of occupation is a daily violence. And so here in the United States, I think people will see on their television screens what happened to George Floyd and what happened to Tamir Rice. And some people will say, why does this happen every so often, every couple weeks? But it's not happening there is a daily reality of violence for Palestinians. And that is why I also think you see growing Black Palestinian solidarity. That same day that Rashida spoke, Cori Bush spoke, and she spoke really just passionately about when the protesters were starting their protests in Ferguson, Palestinians were reaching out to them to tell them how to avoid tear gas and how to deal with the force that they were going to receive from the police, because that is part of everyday life in Palestine.
As far as this particular conflict this particular round of, and you spoke eloquently to what the daily life of a Palestinian is. For people who want to know what happened to jump things off this time, this particular time, what is this particular sort of pocket of violence about?
So I think you've probably seen the hashtag Save Sheikh Jarrah often. Yes. And that is a neighborhood in Jerusalem. And so one of the things in our conversation, if Simone and I start to use jargon that is not going to be familiar, we really want you and the audience to, we want that to be a dialogue. So stop us and correct us. But Sheikh Jarrah is a Jerusalem neighborhood. It's a historically Palestinian neighborhood. And for the last few decades, there have been right-wing Jewish groups that have tried to displace and remove the Palestinian presence. And so there are families who are, because of a law that allows Jewish citizens of Israel to take over land in a way that Palestinians cannot claim that land, it is using that law to evict them from their homes. These are people who have been there for decades, and they were displaced in 1948 when Israel was founded, and they moved to Jerusalem, and now they're being displaced again. And that is what started the East Jerusalem part of this. And Jerusalem is such an important place for all of the peoples of the region, Christian, Muslim, Jew, that anything that happens in Jerusalem really can spark, can escalate very quickly. And so after those protests started, you know, it was the holy month of Ramadan for Muslims. And on the holiest night of Ramadan, Muslims were praying in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they were met with tear gas and stun grenades by Israeli police, which was a provocation that I think even those of us who have followed this on a daily basis for years, it really was a shocking thing to see. People praying in a very sacred space met with violence.
What is your reaction to, or your response to, the way that President Biden has responded to what's happening right now?
Simone, I'll let you.
I think we're both smiling at each other because we're both just like, I mean, there's just no words to describe the outrage and the disappointment in the administration right now. I mean, the fact that the State Department can't even condemn the killing of Palestinian children is horrifying to me. And I think I just wanted to add, as a Jewish American, you know, the first thing I just wanted to say is about the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, which is that this is in the center of Jerusalem, and it's a neighborhood that Jewish Israelis drive by all of the time. It's very easy to pass by it and just not look around the corner at what's happening to these people. And I think, you know, as Americans, we can also understand this in our own context, that if you're a privileged person, you could move through the world very easily without knowing what's happening to your neighbors down the street or on the other side of the highway. And so for me, like again and again, it just feels so important to challenge Jewish Americans, but also just Americans in general, to understand what are these stories that have been kept from us for so long that have made us understand the reality on the ground in such a skewed light? But the second thing I wanted to say is that American politicians, including the Biden administration, very often defend Israel's right to, you know, occupy and kill Palestinians in the name of some idea of Jewish safety. And it just feels really important for me to say, there's no universe in which, for me, as a Jewish person, the massacre of Palestinian children makes me any more safe or any more free in this world. And I think one of the things that Rebecca and I talked about that we just really wanted to impress upon your audience is like, just that idea that a better future for all people is possible and is necessary for all of us to demand. And there are thousands of American Jews who showed up at protests this weekend for Palestinian liberation. And it's just very important for me to convey that message that I do not want the Biden administration supporting the killing of Palestinian children in my name.
So a couple of things. One of the reasons that you might see some trepidation from American celebrities or people with platforms in speaking about this, especially if they happen to be on the Palestinian side of things. And we should say that Palestinians, we're talking about people who, as I understand it, would call their home the state of Palestine. It's a diverse group. There are Christian Palestinians. It's you know, a small percentage, but we're not talking to, this is not, once again, I want to move this out of, this is a political thing about land and territory. This has much less to do with the fucking crusades and all of the other stuff that they keep telling you guys. That's not what this is about.
And my family includes Jewish Palestinians and Christian Palestinians. So
Jewish Palestinians, Christian Palestinians. Yeah. And if you're, you know, you can go back to a time when everybody has their hand in why we're here. The Brits have their hand in why we're here. The world government, the United Nations has their hand in why we're here. Everyone has done their best to pass the buck on this particular conflict.
Absolutely.
And so I guess the first thing I was going to ask you is, a lot of the reason why American celebrities don't want to talk about this is because if you're critical of Israel, sometimes you'll get branded an anti-Semite. And if you're critical of anything that Israel does, people will say that you are anti-Jewish, you hate Jews. And that's a hell of a thing to wear when you've seen what the Jewish people have been through. What do you guys think of that? Before I get to everything else that I want to unpack, because I want to make sure I'm being responsible in this conversation, have you seen that? And what do you think of people that say that and do that?
Look, we didn't do the sort of like personal stories to kick this off. So I'm going to back up one second and just say that my grandfather was born in Warsaw, Poland, and his mother was the only one of her 12 siblings who escaped Europe before the Holocaust, and they moved to what then became the State of Israel. So I know very intimately in my own personal family story how the founding of the State of Israel is in part one of the reasons that I'm alive today. And I don't dismiss that deep fear and trauma that is part of the DNA of so many Jewish people. It is part of our communal story. We also have to recognize that the founding of the State of Israel was a catastrophe for Palestinians. It's the Nakba. This weekend was Nakba Day, which commemorates 73 years since the founding of the state, when over 750,000 Palestinians were expelled or fled from their homes in the process of the founding of the state. So I think it's essential for us to talk about the fact that the place that became a safe haven for many people also has continued to this day to be built on the oppression and dispossession of another people. And I believe in the deepest fiber of my being that addressing that historic injustice is essential for a future of safety and rights and well-being and justice for all people. The second thing I just wanted to say about the anti-Semitism accusations is that it's really unfortunate that defenders of the Israeli government have worked very hard for many decades now to equate any sort of criticism of their government policies with anti-Semitism. And, you know, I've already said many times that as a Jewish person, I don't support these policies. But again, polling will show you, and just the organizing of thousands of Jewish Americans tells us over and over again that many, many American Jews and Jews around the world do not support what the Israeli government is doing to Palestinians. And I personally think it's an insult to Jewish history to continue to slander people who are speaking up for Palestinian rights with that label. And I know it's very scary, and there's a lot of money and a lot of efforts on the right working to intimidate people out of speaking up for human rights and justice.
So If I'm listening to this podcast and we have all types of listeners, and someone may be listening to this and saying, wow, they're being very one-sided. What would you tell those people to say? Like, where would you tell those people to go to get an unbiased opinion of just understanding what exactly is going on so they can make their opinions on the situation?
So, Virgil, I mean, that's a tough question for me to answer because I think that we're speaking the truth, and it's not a truth that will make everybody comfortable. I'm happy to give more resources, but I think sometimes people need to be uncomfortable. You know, we have been sending Israel billions of dollars in weapons every year. That's a fact. Right now, we are getting ready right now to send them $700 million more in weapons right now while the bombing of Gaza is going on. There comes a point where, there are counter arguments, and those arguments will say, Hamas is sending rockets, and they are, and that should be condemned. And in my opinion, anyone who targets civilians, that is a war crime. But there is an overwhelming truth that can no longer, I think, be obscured, which is that for decades, I mean, Van, you asked this a little bit earlier, and I just wanna give some examples of what it actually means to live under occupation. There are roads that throughout Palestinian areas in the West Bank that they are not allowed to drive on. They are Jewish only roads. You have to be Israeli to drive on them. Your land could be taken at any time. You cannot get permits to build a home, but if you build without a permit, it will be demolished. You might be a pregnant woman who will stand for hours and end up giving birth at a checkpoint. There are hundreds of checkpoints throughout the West Bank. You will never know, will I make it to my cousin's wedding? Will I stand here for 4 hours? It might be a village that's 20 minutes away and it will take you 4 or 5 hours to get there. If you live in Gaza, you live in an open air prison. People are not free to go in. They are not free to go out. The UN said that Gaza would be uninhabitable by 2020. It is 2021. And so the amount of suffering that Palestinians are going through on a daily basis doesn't have sides. There is just a truth there. And one of the things that I sincerely, I work with Israelis on a daily basis. And many of them say to me, why are progressives in the United States not standing up for us? This is not the Israel we want. Why are you helping? Netanyahu is their Trump. And so what they say to me, and Simone, I'm sure hears the same thing, why aren't Americans standing up and helping us and empowering us to build an Israel that actually matches our values? And so I always feel wary about this idea of, I don't know, biased or two sides, or, I mean, there is the truth, and there is a real need after, I think, many years of not hearing them to hear Palestinian voices and not ask them to have to air. I mean, you don't ask white supremacists to come on to hear the other side of, you know, when a Black Lives Matter protest is going on and they're talking about what the experience is to be a Black person in America. And so that's where I really, you know, hesitate with this, that, yeah, there are many sides. There aren't two sides. There are many. But there is a truth here. And the fact that we send billions of dollars each year to Israel means we are complicit in this status quo right now.
Huh. For us to be responsible in a conversation, we have to consider something that is difficult to consider sometimes, which are people's emotions. Mm-hmm. And those emotions are based on things that they've heard, things that they've seen, and things that they've told will happen if other things don't happen, right? So with this issue, we have to sort of view it from the lens of there are two sides fighting here. What are they fighting for? What is the central thing that is stopping this from being resolved? And for either one of you, mm-hmm. is there any argument from the Jewish-Israeli side of this that you guys see, understand, and get in terms of what we're, I'm like, I some of the videos that I've been being sent, I saw a video with a guy taking a woman's house. Woman looks at the guy, says, hey, you're taking my house. He says, if I don't take it, somebody else will.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I'm looking for is someone to make sense of that video. And I don't want to vilify anybody. I really don't. But what I want to understand how that's a thing. And I think a lot of people do, because it's easy to be binary about this. And look, I get what side of this you guys are on, but there has to be another side, right? Like there has to be some sort of edict or some sort of reason why this is happening and people feel like that's okay. If I were to ask you guys to give me that reason, would you have any answers?
I mean, I've seen that same video that you're talking about, and I would say that video and that response is the product of a supremacist ideology. So, I mean, and again, I can say, like, would a supremacist ideology, meaning that man standing there telling that Palestinian woman, I have the right to your home, I can take your home, and if I don't take it, somebody else will, is somebody who's been told that this entire land is his, given to him by God, and also that he lives in a state that in its daily policies and the statements of its most powerful government ministers repeat over and over and over again the idea that this land is only for Jewish people, that rights are only for Jewish people, and that, you know, and at the end of the day, that almost like entirely it is Jewish people in that land who receive just all of the benefits of living in that state, which is taking more and more land and more privileges for one group of people. And I guess I just want to also speak to your question about this, like, you know, all sides. I think we hear a lot the idea that, like, we need to hear from many sides and it's really complicated. And you know what? I completely agree with that. We should hear from as many sides as possible. And it is really complicated. But there is only one issue on which, when we are told it's complicated, we're told that to stop us from learning more. I want to encourage everyone who's listening to this right now, it is absolutely complicated. And if you want to learn, as you know, everything Rebecca and I have talked about so far, there are books on books on books that you can read. There are so many organizations that we could send you to. So I just want to say that too often that idea is used to shut down conversation and to scare people out of learning. Mm-hmm. And I really want to encourage people to take the opposite, and also to know that, like, sometimes we can see a military bombing apartment buildings and killing entire families and killing children, and knowing in our hearts and in our guts that's wrong, no matter what.
I want to talk about something that Rebecca, you said about the military aid that's coming from the U.S. to Israel. One of the things that we're seeing on social media and people talk about from the other side is that, well, Hamas sent rockets over, you know, to Israel, and so Israel's defending itself. That's one of the narratives that's going around. But one thing I saw, and Trevor Noah was talking about this on The Daily Show, is that Israel has one of the most powerful militaries in the world. And so it's disproportionate compared to what they have in Palestine. So what can you speak a little bit towards that and kind of talk about that narrative? Because that's one of the things that's going around on social.
Yeah, I want to, I'm going to give you some numbers. And sometimes I hesitate to do this because I don't like to reduce human life to numbers. But as of, you know, 2 hours ago, 10 Israelis have been killed in a week of violence, and 212 Palestinians, and a third of them are children. And so one of the problems with this violence specifically in Gaza is Gaza is one of the densest, most populated, densely populated places in the world. And people cannot leave Gaza. Palestinians don't have the option of leaving Gaza. So what will happen is Israel will give them a warning. We're bombing your building in 5 minutes. I mean, literally. And I would like anyone to imagine, I mean, what do you grab? Do you grab food? Do you grab your birth certificate? Do you grab, what do you do in the, I mean, other than grabbing your family and your kids, and where do you go? There is nowhere to go. And just a few days ago, Israel bombed the home of the Associated Press, and which also housed the two biggest internet servers in Gaza. And the answer is always, well, we think there was Hamas there. I don't know if there was Hamas there. Israel didn't give any proof. But at some point, as humans, it can't be okay just to say there may be a Hamas guy somewhere in the neighborhood. And so we can bomb a home and have 10 people from the same family die in an instant.
Or they'll say they're using it as a shield,
yeah,
right?
I mean, like, yeah. There's literally nowhere for people to go. There is nowhere for people to go. And so what the Israelis are telling you right now, what they are saying right now, is that they want to restore deterrence. They want to teach Hamas a lesson. But we see, I mean, if it's a lesson that has to be taught every 18 months or every year, it's not working. Like, this is not, you cannot bomb people into submission. And so we have to try something radically different. And I mean, I think, I mean, if you, like, can you imagine being a child in Gaza who has never left and has only known, they barely have water, they barely have electricity. I don't know what it's possible for us to expect of a population. I mean, this is not going to be a popular opinion, but I honestly sometimes ask myself, I'm shocked that Palestinians are not more violent. It's not that I'm surprised that there are Palestinians who take up violence. I am often surprised that they are not more violent. And I say that because when Palestinians are nonviolent, we ignore them. The only time you hear about the occupation and Gaza, the Gaza has been blockaded for 15 years. And the only time we hear about it is when Hamas is sending rockets to Israel. As a global community, we are sending the message that says, when you're quiet, when you're peaceful, when you protest peacefully, we don't care. We will ignore you.
Are you suggesting that Hamas is right to send rockets to Israel?
Of course not. What I'm saying is that if we want to, like, if of course not. Absolutely not. What I'm saying is that I used to co-chair an organization called Just Vision. We make documentary films about nonviolent leaders in Israel and Palestine. And the reason we make those films is because we often got the question, where is the Palestinian Gandhi? Where is the Palestinian Martin Luther King? And the answer is they are there. Those leaders are there, but nobody ever hears from them. And so the lesson that the world is sending is we will respond to violence. And when there's not violence, we don't want to hear about you. We don't want to hear about what your life is like, and we're not going to do anything about it. And I think that at that point, humans become desperate. I don't understand. Like, I'm not a violent person in any way. Like, I have a hard time stepping on a bug. So, like, I'm not the person that can understand when someone takes up arms and becomes violent. But what I desperately want is for the rest of the world to acknowledge and stop this cycle. Because you don't stop the cycle with more violence. We're not going to bomb Gaza into submission.
I just want to say, and this is probably my last question, is there's probably things that we haven't asked you that maybe there's that you want to talk about. So I just want to give you the floor to say that. And then I also want to say we're seeing the social media activity pick up and people speak, you know, in support of Palestinians in a way that we've never seen before. So the second part of that question would be, what do you continue to do in regards to the situation that's happening right now? What can people do, whether it's reading about it, I don't know if there's donations, if there are websites that they can get resources on to kind of find out what's going on, find out how they can help support, because obviously it can't end at just a hashtag and reposting on social media. Whoever wants to take it. Sorry, yeah, I didn't direct it.
I'll start. Yeah, thank you. So it's true that it can't end at social media, but that is a great place to start, because I think it is important to kind of open up and make people feel more comfortable speaking out. Yesterday, the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin sent a tweet that said, normalize saying free Palestine. And that meant a lot to me. And so I'll just share a few organizations that I think are doing great work and giving people great information. The first one is Simone's organization, B'Tselem. There's also a great group called the Institute for Middle East Understanding. Those are places where you can get really informed information and also hear from Palestinian voices. And I think it's really important to lift them up. And, you know, I think that all we have ever asked for as activists is that for those who consider themselves progressives and who are guided by a set of values, to just apply those values uniformly. And just apply those same values and the same things that you would say here about how people should be treated here, there, right? That's really, and I believe that's why you see groups like the Sunrise Movement and Black Lives Matter standing up and saying that they stand with Palestinians, because for a very long time, there was a phenomenon called progressive accept Palestine. And I think it's important that that's starting to shatter and that people are having those conversations. And so they're not always easy. This conversation wasn't always easy, but it's important. And I really thank you guys for having us.
Samal?
Yeah, I just wanted to add a couple of things to what Rebecca said. I'm really glad, first of all, that you made the comment about being progressive except for Palestine. I think the thing that I wanted to say to close up is like, any American who's been involved in the Black Lives Matter movement or in any like transformative social justice movement right now has the tools that they need to understand what's going on in Israel and Palestine. And I just wanted to also add to that that, you know, after the January 6th storming of the Capitol, we heard a lot of different types of conversations about accountability and about consequences for those people that had, you know, stormed the Capitol, and about the idea that if there weren't consequences for the people who allowed that to happen, that it could happen again, right? And that that also we needed to attack those problems at their root. And I just wanted to say again, in this context, like we have seen for many decades, politicians at best offer their version of thoughts and prayers, right? Like hope for peace on all sides, two-state solution. We actually need our politicians to demand consequences for the Israeli government's continued violation of Palestinian human rights. Second, as a Jewish person, please don't forgive the crimes of the Israeli government in my name. The other thing I just wanted to point folks to a couple other organizations, definitely please look up B'Tselem and the IMEU. You can also look up Adala, which is a Palestinian, an organization run by Palestinian citizens of Israel, Breaking the Silence, former Israeli soldiers speaking about their experience in the occupied territories, if not now, young American Jews speaking out, and also Rabet by PIPD, that's R-A-B-E-T, who are offering a lot of great resources about things happening on the ground.
Yeah, before I let you ladies go, I want to tell you something real quick. I had a different job not many moons ago, but a couple of moons ago. And there's a story we had done at this job about something Joan Rivers had said. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when there were sort of more flare-ups in the region. And, you know, God bless the dead, but what she said was just disgusting. Right? I couldn't imagine it, right? And, you know, I was very charged up at that point. You know, I've been reading my Chomsky. and, you know, he has a very clear worldview on it, and he'll send you, you know, Noam says, hey, the leading scholars. Then you go, who are the leading scholars? And you read all those books, and before you're in a rabbit hole. So I have my particular worldview on this, right? I have a way that I look at it. And it is, I'm sure as you guys would understand, in lockstep with you. I remember trying to broach this with some of my coworkers, and it was an impossible conversation to have. It was impossible. I had never seen such rage. I had never seen such vitriol. And these are people that I palled around with all the time. And we had had a million conversations about dozens and dozens and dozens of things that are uncomfortable to talk about. You talk about it, you yell it out, and it's over. This, though, wasn't like that. It lingered. And it festered, and it became a thing with some of them. And in conversations like this, you're always trying to view them from a human level to understand why those emotions exist. Are we to a point right now where on this issue, this is my last question for each one of you, where we have to say, fuck people's feelings and let's get to the work? I'm asking. Because the reality is, I do care about what people, because when we're talking about Simone, when we're talking about people who have caught hell all over the place, of course, our Jewish brothers and sisters have caught hell all over the place. And of course, they were there in civil rights with us to a degree. And so you don't want to be insensitive, but you also want to make progress. What's the right prescription? You guys don't have to be long-winded on it, especially since I was so long-winded in the question itself.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate that question. I just wanted to say, you know, I don't want to minimize like the pain and the fear that Jewish people feel around this stuff. It goes really deep for a lot of us. I know a lot of people, you know, again, we're going back to what are these ingrained narratives. There are a lot of Jewish people who feel like after all the hell we've been through, we got to look out just for ourselves and not for anybody else. And that's, you know, and look, first, I think for me, I have a different understanding from Jewish history and of my Jewish values, which is that my Jewish values compel me to value all human life as sacred. And my lesson from Jewish history is that if we're not all safe and protected and have rights in our society, that nobody is actually fully safe and free. And so it's both a, like, for me, it's a moral thing, and it's also a strategic thing. I really deeply, like in every fiber of my being, do not believe that my loved ones and my family in Israel and Palestine will not be fully safe and free until everybody in that land has equality and human rights and full protection. And the last thing I will say to about your question about discomfort and feeling, I hope for any like Jewish people who are listening to this, who might feel really painful, like this stuff is painful and uncomfortable for them. Yes, also we can say that it's important to distinguish between our discomfort and real material, like human suffering and oppression right now. And hearing painful truths that we've been shielded from for too long is not the same thing as being oppressed. And I would really urge anyone who's having that kind of discomfort and trepidation to push themselves beyond it. And for anybody who's not Jewish who's listening to this, to really understand, to make a really conscientious effort to not replicate any form of anti-Semitism when you're criticizing the Israeli government, and to make sure, you know, we didn't even get to this is a whole other conversation, but like, you know, we have seen a terrifying resurgence of anti-Semitism in this country in the last couple of years, and it is entirely fueled by the same, you know, racist ethno-nationalist authoritarian type figures that support the occupation and the dispossession of Palestinians. So I want to be clear here again that what we're talking about is like building a future in which all people's dignity and humanity is uplifted and respected. And I think I'll leave it with that.
It is difficult. And as an Arab American growing up in post 9/11 America, I mean, I have had those difficult conversations on almost a daily basis in my personal life, in my work life. And I mean, and so I also don't want to minimize. And when I'm asking you to speak up, I'm also asking you to have difficult conversations that I can understand why a lot of people wouldn't want to have. But we do have a lot of power in this, like the United States still has a lot of power to in many ways, really galvanize and inspire. Like if you see some of the murals in Gaza and on the wall in the West Bank, they are of George Floyd. You know, like that, like what we say when we see, when we tell Palestinians that we see them, like for this mother in Gaza to say, my words are more powerful than their weapons. It's not just her words, it's ours too. And so it's painful. And look, I come from a family that many of whom voted for Donald Trump. And that was very hard for me. That was a, those are like daily difficult conversations. There are Thanksgivings that I miss. But I feel like
Trump supporters. Really?
Yeah.
You still kicking it with him now,
or
did you?
Podcast as well.
Yeah, we got to bring you back because I feel for you right now.
It's
I want to.
As well.
That's an extra hug for you.
I just think when you are approaching this genuinely from a place that you want. I mean, I am invited into synagogues often. I am invited into. I will go to any space that will have me to have this conversation, because I think often there is a lot of fear of the other. People need to hear that, like, in the end, what we want is just all of the people, Palestinians and Israelis, to have equal political, social, legal, economic rights. And so I think that as difficult as the conversations are, and it may take one, two, three conversations to get someone that you care about there, if you are approaching it genuinely from a place of humanity and love, like that's a conversation worth having. And if you, some people might get mad at you, I'm okay with that. Like I'm okay, like I've had, Israel-Palestine is not the only difficult conversation that I have to have on a daily basis. And I think that's probably true for everybody, all four of us, right? Like
right.
It's different in degrees. But you, I mean, would you ever give up on talking about like your own life experience or the experience of the Black community to people who need to hear it if they weren't receptive in the first instance or the second? Like, I just think this is the work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I really appreciate both of you guys coming on. I know it's a tough time. I know there's work to be done. And you know, I remain as the same way I always am, which is skeptically hopeful in the future, you know? So that's it from me. Rachel, you got anything before I let these ladies go?
No, I just want to say I'm probably a little bit more optimistic than Van, maybe like a couple of more degrees, but I just think that it's I have to go back to the social media response. I just think the fact that we're talking about it in ways that we never have, a whole generation is opened up to what's the conflict that's happening. I think that's promising. And so I just want to thank you guys for your time, for coming on here.
Thank you.
Breaking things down for us. And I know our listeners gained something regardless.
And Simone and I would like to invite both of you to Israel and Palestine when things calm down. I think that you'd love it. Beautiful
love
place.
To.
Absolutely.
No, I'm coming. I'm going.
Man, we're going to send pictures and you're going to be jealous. It's a beautiful place.
I might zoom in until things calm down a little bit. But
she said when they calm down.
When the time is right.
Right. All right, ladies, thank you so much for joining us and having you on. It's been a pleasure having you on Higher Learning. Thanks. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much.